Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from wonderful, sunny Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a great show lined up for you guys today. We have my co-host, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com, Linda Feinholz. Linda is calling in from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. It's fabulous here in Los Angeles, and we get to have a lot of fun today because the guest who's joining us is calling in from somewhere in Europe.
Part of what I love
about the new world of doing business is the fact that technology is enabling us to connect with each other from around the globe to really learn from the best, how best to build really amazing businesses that serve more people, help them create the results they're looking for in their lives as we're creating lucrative businesses that let us leverage our time, our intelligence, our energy, and do what we want most in the world at the same time. And so it's really a kick to be able to bring people to our audience from around the world, and that's Natasha Vorompiova. So, Natasha, welcome aboard through Skype.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited.
It's great.
So hello, Natasha. Nice to meet you.
Same here. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
So as a little bit of background for our listeners, we're going to dive into Natasha's background because it's so helpful to understand the path people have walked in building their own businesses and taking their own expertise into the world. And I want our listeners to understand from both perspectives today what it is to be an entrepreneur walking that path and also exactly Natasha's area of specialization and how she helps other entrepreneurs take their business to the next level. And we're going to dive into it from this perspective of how to create leverage in business through systems and really getting yourself so well organized that you're freeing yourself up for what most needs your attention in business. So, Natasha, welcome. Where are you joining us from today?
I'm in Belgium, and it's a bit rainy. Most of the time in Belgium, so I'm longing for sunshine.
So
sunshine today.
I was going to say, at this time of year, where does one go to find sunshine in Europe?
I don't know. Maybe somewhere a bit more to the south. My husband just left for Cyprus today, so I think that's there.
The sun's down in Cyprus. When I lived in Switzerland, the running joke was, wait 15 minutes and this too shall pass. If you had sun, it would become clouds. If it was clouds, you'd have sun. So I don't know if it's the same over in Belgium. as a little bit of background for our listeners, how did you come to be doing the work you're doing now? You probably didn't come down your mother's birth canal being someone who systematizes and organizes businesses.
Not at all. And actually, I couldn't really imagine myself running a business when I was growing up because I lived in the former USSR, so it was really, the times were different, and the country was so different. Entrepreneurship was not even in the realm of possibilities. It was after my traveling around and actually looking at what is possible that it became kind of one of the ways for me to make a living. And the decision was made actually once my son was born, and I didn't want to go back to the office and spend most of the day there and not see my son. So that's when the idea was born initially, and then I actually tried a couple of ideas, and what I found was that I was so lost in what I had to do in order to just run the business. There were so many things. I remember just like running in circles. I had to learn so many things and like do so many things, wearing so many different hats. And only once I started kind of creating some structures in my own business, because naturally that was my strength, and I looked at what worked for me in the corporate environment, and I saw that, okay, I had those structures in place, so what if I transferred that into my own day-to-day life when I'm working from my home office? And it started working so well that shortly after, I was already advising my friends how to work more efficiently, and that's when I knew that this is the path that I really meant to pursue and what I want to and need to teach to others, just creating structures and systems and making working more efficiently and being more productive on a daily basis.
And you mentioned a moment ago working in a corporate environment, so I think it's really helpful for our listeners to understand the kinds of work you were doing early in your career, the kinds of companies you were working with, and the kinds of issues that you were working on. So I'd love it if you would share part of that background, because it will give a great context when people realize what a shift it was to decide to shift to entrepreneurial work.
Yeah, absolutely. My background is in public relations and marketing. I worked for a Ukrainian company initially doing more of the management of, right now it's kind of affiliates, but different offices, and making sure that the products that each office was responsible for were communicating seamlessly. After that, I moved to the U.S., and for 3 years, I worked as a salesperson for a large company where we were selling media reports, and I was doing a lot of client work and making sure that, again, communication between different departments ran smoothly, because there was I was in the middle between the client and the production department, and then there were other parties that we had to work seamlessly so that the client received what they needed to receive on time. And where I finally found myself was I worked at KPMG Cyprus, where my responsibilities originally were I was a legal administrator for offshore companies, but I was really leading towards this project management responsibilities all the time, and there I was bugging my boss all the time about the fact that the files that we had, like everything was saved in a paper format. So we were walking the corridors of the office, and I was always afraid that everything will start falling on me, and I will just be trapped under these huge files. And in the end, my boss gave in, and I became, in addition to my legal administration responsibilities, I became project manager and was responsible for a project to moving that entire company to a paperless office where we had everything scanned. I transferred everything into a huge database and organized a database so that whatever we had on files was available online as well. And it was absolutely transformational, because all of a sudden we had this big office, very spacious, very sunny, and you didn't have to run around with those huge files. So, that was the
liberation from being, working your way through piles of papers to actually seeing the top of the desk, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a great change. And thank you so much for sharing it so thoroughly, because what's so important about your story is helping people understand that truly most people in business, whether they're in a large corporate setting or they're in a small business setting, it isn't automatic to know how to systematize. You learn it on the job. You learn it when you realize that you're sick and tired of dealing with routine things, with having to put too much thought into them, or, as you said, you know, piled with paper or projects that really needed to figure out how to be streamlined. And you learned it by getting the dirt under your fingernails and actually figuring out how to make it all work better. And building the muscles of thinking systematically and thinking organizationally so that you could then translate having done it in those settings to other settings. Because isn't that the truth of systems, is it's a way of thinking and a way of organizing so that it works across every kind of business?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy that you made this point, Linda, because it is the type of approach that you have to take when you start dealing with something, is looking at, okay, so this is what I do. And if I do it on a regular basis, how do I make sure that the steps I take every time to get me from point A to point B are the same, that they are the most efficient, that everybody who is involved in either this project or might need anything that kind of a byproduct of this process, they are also in the loop, and that they know what's happening, and that there is nothing that falls through the cracks. So yeah, it's definitely kind of the approach that we need to take every single time.
So you made the shift because people were coming to you and asking you questions about how they could be doing it differently. How did you make this transition deciding exactly what kind of business you wanted to work in? Because you could have decided you wanted to be doing, systems improvement in big corporations.
That was not where my heart was. And I think that made the decision very easy. I saw once I was already at KPMG, I really saw the result of, like, okay, if I were to transform a big organization, like, this is the impact, and it's this way. But for me, working with small businesses was so much more dear to my heart, just because I went through that. I was in big corporation, you get lost, and like, to me, it's, even though the size of the project is much bigger, I still feel that the impact that my work makes when I work with small businesses is that much greater, because I get to work with each individual person and I help them to up their game. I really help them to maximize their impact, and it has this ripple effect, and it's just, to me, that much more fulfilling. So it wasn't that difficult to decide whether I want to work with large companies or small ones.
On your blog, you have an article titled "Systems That Sell Series: Alexander Franzen," and in it, there's a quote that says, "When you focus on being helpful, you'll never worry if you're valuable." That is such a beautiful quote. When you focus on being helpful, you'll never worry if you're valuable. And in the article, you talk about your new mantra, start with love, keep it simple, you are not confused. I don't know if that's your mantra or Alexandra's. Can we talk about what it means to start with love, keep it simple, you are not confused?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that Alexandra shared with me, but I couldn't agree more. I do believe that we oftentimes overcomplicate things, and we mean well by that. But there is so much information that comes at us. There are so many ways right now, for example, to run a business, to bring in new clients, or things to do to market our business, or just ways to communicate with other clients or partners or somebody. And sometimes we get lost in all that. Everything seems to be important. Everything seems to be urgent. And in the end, we spread ourselves so thin. I do believe that in order for us to be the most effective at what we do, the first thing that we need to do is kind of strip everything that happens in our little businesses to the minimum. Like, what are those things that we need to do given our goal, given the business model that we have for our little business, given that what we're trying to deliver to our clients. And once those fundamental things are in place and they are running efficiently, then we can add something else. Then we can add a new tactic. Then we can introduce a new product or launch a new service. But it should not be happening all at once. We really have to start with the basics and build on them.
Yeah, that's really good. And further down in that same article, you talk about the one of Alexandra's favorite techniques, and she says the next time she's sitting down to write a new blog post, email, newsletter, or anything really, try this. She says, decide how you want your reader to feel, decide how you want what you want your reader to know, and what you want your reader to do. And isn't that really true that you're asking those same questions no matter what you're doing with a system in your business, not just with writing a blog post?
Yes, it is very true. And it all goes back to, in my opinion, being very intentional. From every single thing that we do, we really have to see why we're doing that. And it can be the big why that Simon Sinek talks about. It's just like what drives us on every single day. But another thing is just like why, knowing why we're doing what we're doing, like that particular moment. Is it really something that needs to be happening, or is it just a task that keeping us away from doing something that needs to happen? Is it something that aligns with our ultimate goals? I get so many requests from our small business owners when they say that I don't know how to organize my workload because there are so many ideas and I want to pursue all of them, and I feel that I'm torn in different directions. Like, I would love to establish systems in my business, but I don't really know what systems to establish because there are way too many things happening, and I want to pursue all of them. And it is very common, and in my opinion, is that you really have to look at, okay, you know what is your goal, say for the next year or something, and it doesn't have to be something very rigid and specific, but there is something that you're working towards. There is something that makes you happiest. There is something that will make a difference in the lives of your clients, your audience, your family. There is that big thing that can be the umbrella of what you're doing. So when you do have these different passions and different projects, look at which ones of them are taking you closer to that goal, and start with those. And again, start with those where your heart lies right now, and that you feel that, okay, if I do not do it, it will be like I'll miss out big time. So start with that, and once that one is going, once you bring maybe somebody in to help you run that area of your business, you can look at something else, or you can look at bringing people who will help you run those other aspects. But again, it goes back to going back to the basics, making it really, really simple for yourself, and establishing structures that will support everything that you are doing on a regular basis.
And I teach my students that they ask the question, no matter what it is they've got in front of them, what is my outcome? Whether it's writing a blog post, creating an episode for a podcast, figuring out how to manage email, what is my outcome? It guides everything they do. And if there isn't an outcome, then it's probably something they shouldn't be doing in the first place.
Love it. Yeah, absolutely agree with you, Gina. Yeah.
You
and
know,
I mean,
Natasha,
one of
really
the things we keep... Sorry, go ahead, Linda.
One of the things that's so fascinating to me is when we talk about systems, you can see people kind of recoil, like, oh, do we really have to talk about systems? And yet the irony is, from little children, we're already being taught how to be systematic. We're taught how to be systematic about putting our clothing on. We forget that we were taught because it simply has become how we do things, or how we brush our teeth, or how we drive a car. A car, you know, usually because we learned it later in life, we remember our driving lessons and so on. I'd love to know, in your experience, why is it that we tend to resist systems, and how to help clients, how do you help your clients break through the resistance? Are there particular areas where you're seeing that resistance crop up, and how do you help people through that?
I agree with you that sometimes when we talk about systems, we kind of think that it's something that puts us in a cage and almost restrains our movement. And a lot of it is about the fact that given like this, there's so much that technology allows us and everything, like systems is considered something that is for big corporations, and if I have a system in my business, it means that everything is like a conveyor belt, and I need to be doing like something like very, very strictly, so I will not be able to freely create. I will not be able to do what I want. I will not have that freedom that I wanted to have when I started my business. So the resistance that small business owners have about systems is more about not really understanding what systems are. And like what you said, Linda, before, is that systems is like nothing else but these little routines that we have. So it's not necessarily even like something that has to do with technology or gadgets or anything of the kind. It's the step-by-step that we take in order to make something happen. It's that little routine that we have in place to make sure that things don't fall through the cracks. And that a routine can be, okay, I'm doing my accounting every Friday afternoon. As I'm having a glass of wine, that would be a nice routine, or that I jump on Twitter every morning for 10 minutes, but I jump there to check new communications or retweet something interesting, and then I'm off to doing something else. So that in itself is a system. So it's not something that will really have you okay. Like now you sit down and you don't move until you've done it. So what I do with my clients, we just, first of all, we break this myth. Like we'll look at, okay, like where do you resist most? Like what do you see? What, in your opinion, is a system, and where is that resistance coming from? Because normally it's just a matter of a conversation to see what is their perception of a system and what it actually is. And after that, we'll look at their strengths and ways to organize their business, which is done in a way that is convenient for them. Because I do believe that businesses are very different, and it's like, and business systems are like fingerprints. They are very individual as well, because you have to take into account the individual itself, their preferences, tools that they already have in their business, their business model, types of services or products they offer. So you can't really have systems in the box.
It reminds me very much of years ago when I was doing work at the time with one of the Disney business units, and it was when these giant calendaring systems from Franklin Covey, I don't recall if they had them in Europe, but throughout America, every business was on this trend of everybody had to have a Franklin Covey planner. They weighed 10 pounds. There was one page for every day of the calendar, and there were pages for taking notes, and there were pages for to-do lists, and there were pages for follow-ups, and all kinds of tabs. And literally, the pages plus the cover and everything weighed 10 pounds, and people were carrying it around. The irony was, of course, it's a great tool. It's a great system for people who had engineering-style minds and had a day filled with back-to-back meetings and to-do items that were going to come out of them that needed to be communicated with other team members. But someone who had one meeting a day or maybe three meetings per week and, you know, walked into the meeting with what they needed to be prepared with, walked out with what they needed next, really didn't need this 10-pound system. And so it really took a while for people to recognize one system doesn't fit all. And as you were just saying, each business is going to have its own style, its own culture. The people in it have a preferred way of working, and you have to design the system so that people will actually use them. Otherwise, there's not much point to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Such a great point. And it goes back to what Gina said earlier, is that you look at what you are trying to accomplish with that system, why you are putting it in place. And when you know that part, you will know what tools you will need to use or what steps you need to take. But then we also look at, okay, if you were to organize it a little bit further, what would be the best way for you to create the structure? Or if you were to share it with somebody else, what is your preferred mode of kind of capturing this process that you have in place? And for some people, it's a video so that they can record their screen as they are doing something and narrating. For another person, or another type of system in process, it can be an audio. It can be, for example, when you want to teach somebody how to have a sales conversation, you can do a role play and record it as an audio. For somebody else, it can be just playing with post-its where you have this process, like several, break it down into several steps. Like you're writing a blog post, like what happens first, what happens after that, what happens after that. And you have this, you write them all on the individual post-its, each step, and put them on a flat surface or pin them to a board and see, okay, does this work? What can I move around? What is that extra step that I don't need to take? What is the part that I can automate? What is the part that I can give to somebody else to manage? So when I look at the strengths of the person I'm working with, we find these ways to make systems fun and enjoyable because it really doesn't have to be something that expects life out of them.
In the Breakthrough Academy programs, one of the points that I make with the students is that there's three kinds of systems. There are the systems that are all about your relationship building and service to your customers, your client-facing systems. And then there are the operational systems that are how you get the business of the business accomplished, whether it's day in and day out, whether it's communicating with vendors, whether it's doing research, development of your products, your services, your programs, and so on. And then there's the administrative back of the house. And when you're working with your folks, how do you help them distinguish what they should give attention to, what's most important to solve first?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a great question, Linda. When we look at the tasks that need to be on somebody's list, we first look at their, so to speak, zone of genius. And usually something is their core offering, like it's something around which the entire business revolves. If it's an artist, it can be something that it's the art that they create. If it's a copywriter, it's the copy that they write. If it's a web designer, it's the web design. So that is something that nobody else can do or deliver the way the person who owns the business and leads the business scans. So when we look at what to leave on their plate and what to delegate, the items that always stay on their plate is those that, first of all, nobody can do, but then something that brings them happiness, the reason why they started their business in the first place, the craft that they want to practice. Another type of task that always stays on their plate is managerial tasks, because it's something that, again, nobody else can do it for them. You really have to step into being the leader of your company. You have to be the one who creates the strategy. You have to be the one who makes sure that the direction in which the business is going and the opportunities that you take on aligned with the goals that you have for your business. At the same time, there is a bunch of tasks that need to happen along the way to make the business run smoothly. And as you mentioned, Linda, it's those logistical tasks. It's administrative stuff. And again, in the beginning, we all take care of everything. But as time goes on, we look at what can be done by somebody else, maybe even better than we do. And that can be, for example, if somebody is a copywriter, but they often post some graphics, for example, on Facebook or on Pinterest, or just use graphics for their blog posts and for their clients, that might not be their zone of genius. And for them, learning how to work with Photoshop or like making sure that everything like looks perfectly, like, that takes them really unrealistically long and unnecessarily long. So that is a great indication of a task that can be given to somebody else at some point. So look at what things you really don't need to be doing, what are the things that take way too much of your time and it's not the core task of your business. And at the same time, look at the things that you drag your feet doing. And again, it can be something that if it's a managerial task, you'll have to find a way to do it yourself. But if it's accounting, for example, you can find a specialist who will be doing that with you and for you.
What I love about systems is that if you take a step back come up to the 64,000-foot level and take an outside look at the activities of a business, you realize just how many things can be systematized. You know, for instance, in my own life, when I'm doing this show, when I'm doing podcasts, when I'm recording things, when I first started out, I fumbled my way through. I figured out what the steps were, what computer systems I had to set up in order to record, to edit, and so on, or like this, to call into the system that we're using. And the average person would say, well, it's so obvious. Just, after you've done it enough times, you'll just know what to do. But the irony is, what I realized was there were 17 different steps. And here's an example of what I mean, that in order for us to get a very clear line for the recording, I actually use a landline. And in using a landline, now very typically in phone systems, we sign up for our phone service and say yes to having call waiting or caller ID interrupt, as I like to call it. What that means is that in the middle of talking on the phone, is there suddenly dead spots or beeps that happen? And so it happens that I have a fax line as well. And so part of my setup before participating in these kinds of calls is to actually unplug. Here we're getting very mundane. I'm unplugging the phone cord from the wall jack that's for the, quote, phone line, and plugging it into the fax line because I don't have call waiting or caller ID on the fax line. And what that means is I have a really smooth call. Sounds great. It sounds simple. But here's the other side of it. At the end of the show, at the end of doing recording, I'll go straight into something else, and it can be 6 hours later when I think, wow, it was really quiet today, before I realize, of course it was quiet, my phone is still plugged into the fax line. So I literally put a check sheet together for myself so that with one glance I could run my eye down that list of steps to take and see that, oh, final step, change the plug back to the phone line. And I have to tell you, when I don't look at the sheet, which takes a split second, all I have to do is hold myself accountable for looking at the checklist rather than memorizing and remembering all 17 steps. I don't have to use the mind share for remembering the 17 steps, only the one. Look at the checklist and run your eye down it. Get the line changed back so I actually can have the rest of my phone calls that are happening in the next hour. So systems can come in the most mundane fashion, and yet when we're using them, it completely frees up our thinking, you know, for the rest of time.
I love your example, Linda. It's such a great point to make that as you said, it's not complex or anything. And by now, you know, it's your second nature to do all these tasks and you know everything by heart. But when we get distracted, when something catches our attention, even something that we do on autopilot can take us off track. So something that doesn't get completed as it needs to be. Or it takes us a long time to, in your case, it's very apparent that no phone calls are coming through. But when, for example, we're doing something and then we're interrupted and we need to get back into that task or just the mindset of finishing it, it takes us that much longer to find that place where we left off. And it's that valuable time that we end up losing that can be easily saved with if we have checklist or any other type of structure we have in place. So, yeah, absolutely true.
A number of years ago, I was working with an attorney helping him grow his legal practice. And one of the things week after week as I was having my meetings with him, one of his complaints was that his paralegal assistant, every time she'd bring a project that she was working on in to show it to him, he could look at it and see that there were at least three different things she hadn't done. And so I said to him, well, how many things do you want her to have completed before she walks in here? And he said, well, you know, there's probably 23 steps to the kinds of research and the kinds of questions she should be asking. And I asked him, so is there a checklist? And he looked at me kind of dumbfounded, like, why should I have to put a checklist together? She should just know. But the truth is other people don't know. Other people don't have the same experience. Other people don't have the track record of even thinking systematically. So one of the most powerful tools in businesses for every kind of activity is a checklist. You know, by assembling that checklist, he was able to really calmly say to her, these are the steps I look for you to have gone through with each project before you present your findings to me. And it completely changed the tone of their communication, their interactions. She could feel really capable, really confident that she had been really thorough before she brought it in. She didn't have to do mind reading to try and figure out what other questions he might have had in mind and so on. And in turn, what that meant was she could start making it routine to use all those steps and now use her thinking at a higher level as well as she was doing her work. And I don't know, it's the joy of checklists, not the new list.
Absolutely. I totally share with you this fascination, and I agree that something simple like a checklist can transform so many things. Oftentimes when we work with somebody, when we hire an assistant or have somebody work with us on a project and things don't go according to how we were expecting them, the project to go or that other person to work out, I also always ask what was the form in which the business owner first delivered the list of the outcomes that she or he wanted to have from this project, because it's for the delegation to happen effectively, we really have to take responsibility for how we give instructions and how we outline how things need to be done. Because just like we mentioned in the beginning of the interview, all businesses are different and we have different requirements and we want things to be done differently to the point where you might be formatting your blog post differently than somebody else. So when you're working with someone, make sure that you have that checklist. Okay, the headline should be this size. Here are the so many spaces need to be present between two paragraphs. Like, this is how you compose a tweetable. This is how you present the picture in the bio, like on this side and on that side. So it seems to be very simple and straightforward, but once you have that checklist or like something to share with another person, it helps them to deliver what you're expecting them to deliver.
And we started the program talking about the idea of leverage, and one of the gems that I would love for our listeners to take away is when you think in this fashion, when you think about this idea of taking a look at an activity that needs to be done, whether it's a very high-level activity like doing the strategic planning or business planning or marketing planning for your business, or it's down to the most mundane of activities, when you describe it, and you can describe it so that you could create a checklist for it, for instance, that same thinking becomes the questions you ask someone about their knowledge and experience when you're looking to hire them and bring them on board. What do they already know how to do, or what approaches do they use for accomplishing that particular kind of task? It also becomes the content of your conversations for doing reviews with that person about how the work is going, or have they uncovered a different or more effective or more productive way to get something done, and in turn lets you do, you know, the annual review, as it's called, of how somebody's doing in a role in your company for your business and so on. So it's leverageable thinking. It's leverageable content. It's leverageable material that you get to use in all these different fashions, from bringing someone on board, training them, managing what's taking place, and reviewing how they and their thinking and their experience can make you and your business work even more smoothly.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give this example. Recently, I was interviewing Danny Eney for an interview series that I'm doing, Systems That Sell, and he gave such a great answer to my question when I asked him how he feels about the fact that if somebody has a small business and they are not really looking to grow further, like they are happy where they are, do they really need systems? Is it something that they need to think about? Like, maybe they don't want to delegate. Maybe they don't want a big team. And he said that I'll be definitely paraphrasing, but I want to get it right. But all of us are looking to get better. So it's really not about the size of the team you want to have or the yearly revenue, but you can always get better at how you do things and what you do and how much time you save doing it. So maybe delegating or bringing a new person on board is not something in your plans, but when you streamline your own operations, you get to experience that freedom that you wanted when you started the business, because things get done quickly, things get done efficiently, things happen, and you don't really need to oversee their happening that much. But just like you said, Linda, I love what you said about making sure that you approach things with that mindset. It is so very true. I do believe that when we create systems, whether it's a checklist or a video or something like that that outlines our process, when we create it thinking that, okay, how do I need to explain it so that if there was somebody else listening to this explanation, they would get it. What point do I need to make? What little things that I do just automatically, I need to point out that everything happens the way it needs to be happened, which is very similar to how we how we deal with our kids. We teach them as well. Like when we teach our child how to drive a car, you see the process through their eyes. You see it completely differently. It's not just we do it automatically. We don't even think about it. But once you start explaining it to somebody, all of a sudden it becomes the process that you need to do this and you need to do that. And it's the same thing with our business and creating systems and structures. It's just making sure that whatever you do it having in mind that your explanation would be clear to somebody if they were to read it and follow instructions.
One of the things that I see with my students is, especially when it comes to building teams, their biggest concern adding to their team, and how can they not necessarily make that an expense? And so as they get started with different systems, whether it's a checklist of some sort or any of the other ways of creating a system that you've just talked about, one of the first things I want them to do is to plan out the first people very carefully so that in the first month of bringing someone into their team, they have that person doing tasks that are revenue generating on purpose, the goal being that by the end of the first month, that person has made them enough to pay for that person the second month. And within 3 to 6 months, plan it so that the person that you've brought into the team first is making you enough that it not only pays for them, but allows you to pay for a second person as well. I see that as one of the keys to what kinds of systems you create first. Do you do anything like that with your people?
I love this example, Gina, and I agree with you that when we go into looking at, who we need to hire, that we do it very strategically. I love the example that you gave, and what I want to add to that is that when I work with my clients, another thing that we look at is making sure that the tasks that you want to delegate to somebody, they are done by a person who knows that task so well that it will not take them as much as it's taking you. For example, going back to the example with creating images, it can take me, it can take me forever. But say
me too.
It takes me 3 hours. If I hire somebody who knows that it's their craft. They can do it in half an hour, which saves me 3 hours of my time that I can generate the money so easily to pay for the person who will be working for me for that half an hour. So looking at, how much time I'm going to free for myself if I delegate it, and how much revenue I need to generate in those 3 hours to be able to pay for that person. It's another great way of looking at it. Because I think that the stuff that is missing for many small business owners, when they hire somebody like that and they free up their time, they do not really have a goal for those hours that they free up. It's not strategically, put you this machine. But no, if I know that I'm going to free 3 hours of my time, how am I going to use it? So making that connection, that link, is another very important step to take, and that's what we'll look at with my clients too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't care whether it's the person I'm hiring that's generating the extra revenue or whether it's my time that I just saved generating the extra revenue. But somehow I've got to turn that person into a profit center and not an expense by the second month.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Lindsay, did I hear you jumping in there?
No. No, go ahead. But I think this is such an important conversation because so often people decide to become entrepreneurs because they want more control over their life. They want more of a sense of purposefulness in what they're doing throughout their day. As we each use all of our, you know, we roll out of bed to spend our daylight hours using all of our experience, our intelligence, our resources. We wanted to make a difference in the world. And the irony is what happens all too often is we lose sight of the fact that regardless of the size of our business, regardless of who it is we're trying to serve or the solutions we're providing, the most important aspect to keep on the table is what's the return we're getting from how we're spending our time. Because even a nonprofit effort has to be for profit. If you want your doors to stay open, you have to keep thinking about what's highest and best use of my time and the time of each person who's on board in the business. And systems are the way that we hand things off of our plate onto the plates of others, knowing that what they're going to do is going to be done with excellence as if it was still in our own hands. And that frees us up to use our time and our efforts on the most high payoff use of our time. Again, high payoff in terms of money, high payoff in terms of relationship building, high payoff in terms of figuring out the next strategy for the business and so on. And truly, the only way to recover that time and free up our attention is by putting systems in place so that we can, in fact, hand things off to other people and hand them off in a way that is having it pay for itself in contributing to the profitability of your business, in the results your clients are getting, and so on. So I just love that we're being so thorough about this in this conversation.
And I have a few clients who, while they get it in theory, they micromanage to such a degree that it actually doesn't save them time, it costs them time. What advice do you have on micromanaging as you are handing things off to other people?
That's a great point and such a great question. It's actually something that we as business owners have to be aware of ourselves, I believe. And what I mean by that is that what is our way of delegating, because one is micromanaging, the other one is just the giving it away and forgetting about it. Another one can be just...
They're both just as bad at extreme levels, right? Just opposite ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely. And then the funny thing is that with different tasks, we can be delegating differently, something that we know how needs to be done. Like we tend to jump in more, whereas something that we really don't even know how it needs to be done, we tend to forget about it. So basically being aware of the fact how you are, like what your style is for each specific task or group of tasks is important. It's kind of creating the awareness. And then putting, again, another structure in place so that it will allow you to still be in control of the situation, but still give a sense of ownership of that task to the person who is working on that task. Because it's really important to understand that when we are jumping in, like first of all, things are not happening as fast as they can be happening, and we are wasting our own time. But at the same time, we are disrespecting the person who is working with us because we show them that we are doubting how things will be done. So what Linda mentioned earlier is that creating systems, creating checklists and outlines how things to be done ensures that level of excellence. But at the same time, creating those points of checking in and making sure that things are indeed happening the way they're supposed to be happening, but there are not too many of those points, it's also important. So depending on the task, it can be, or maybe a set of tasks, it can be weekly reports. If it's a large project, you will definitely need to check in throughout the project, like break it into little milestones to make sure that your team member is still on track and the deadlines are met. But restrain yourself from doing it too often, because you really, really need to give that person the freedom to show what they're capable of and make them feel as a valuable member of the team. Because if you are doing it way too often, it doesn't allow them to shine and help you.
And that really suggests that in the system you create, there's three separate components to it. There's the delegation component, the trust component, and the verify component. They really need to be built into the system, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you broke it into these three very distinctive parts. Yes, I totally agree that trust is really, really important when we do it. And, yeah, it takes a bit of time to train ourselves to let go. And it's difficult because our businesses are, as our kids, it's not anybody that we will allow to look after them. So the trust factor is important, and that's why the delegation or hiring, rather, should never be an event. It should be a process where you are verifying that the person that you are hiring for that position is fully qualified and that they would be great for the team, for the environment that you're creating, and they would be a terrific addition to the team. And building in those check-in points, any type of reporting system, whether they are sending you reports and in what form, or you are checking in with them to make sure that the deadlines are met, that is the last very important piece to make sure that you have the peace of mind that things are still happening and they're happening the way they want them to happen, and at the same time that team member feels that they are their supervisor, so to speak, is in the loop of how things are happening, and if there is a question, they are free to ask and make sure that they do not really proceed into doing something, doing it the wrong way.
One of the points that I make to people who are in my programs is you don't have to solve it all yourself. If you take a step back and say, what is it that I need to have systematized, it opens it up to actually asking, who might already have experience systematizing this? Actually, it might be somebody who's already on your team or somebody you want to bring onto your team in order to help set up that system. And when it's someone who's already on your team, it's so much more powerful to engage their thinking, because then you have their ownership in designing how the system could work, in working with the system, in evaluating if you're getting the result that you want. And now you're letting every person on the team feel a sense of ownership about it. I literally this morning got a phone call from a customer service member of another team. I had opened up my email and I saw I was billed for something that the agreement had been that I was not going to be billed for. And I thought, oh, you know, later on today I'll have to send word to them. My phone rang and it was someone from their customer service department letting me know that she had noticed I'd been billed and she wanted me to know that she was taking care of getting it reversed and letting them know that there was a glitch in the system. And that kind of ownership, she didn't wait for someone else to say, okay, by Friday, contact Linda. She saw it, she owned it, she knew it needed to be solved, and she took ownership over communicating with me as one of their customers, letting their team know what needed to be solved and so on. And that's the power of empowering the people who are parts of our team in creating the systems themselves. So,
and Linda, we're going to run out of time without telling people how they can get in touch with Natasha.
Absolutely. So people can find all the information about Natasha at systemsrock.com. And she's coming out with a fabulous guide that people can use to get themselves started. And there will be a link in the show notes to that as well. at www.bbdnow.com/systematic success. You can always go to the show notes to find the links to our guests, and that's where you'll be able to find how to get in touch with Natasha.
Well, I want to encourage our listeners. Sorry, go ahead, Natasha.
I just wanted to thank you both, ladies, for having me today and allowing me to talk about systems, because that's a topic that I'm very passionate about, and I'm so happy that we got a chance to break some stereotypes about systems and allow people to see how approachable and how invaluable systems truly are.
But you cannot build a successful business without them. It's physically impossible to do. And systems are the key to really getting the freedom that you want by owning a business in the first place. I've been out checking around on systemsrock.com as we've been talking and in advance of today's call, and you've got great stuff on your blog. Just reading your blog is a good education for our listeners. So I want to encourage each and every one of you, go check out systemsrock.com right now. You're going to learn a lot in the process. Thank you again, Natasha. Thank you so much, Linda. And Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.